You're killing me, Larry!
Larry. Fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
Larry. Larry.
As a kid, I was kind of a radio junkie. Sure, I'd listen to Top 40 in New York, mostly 77 WABC, home of Cousin Bruce Morrow and Dandy Dan Ingram, Chuck Leonard, Charlie Greer.
77 Music WABC.
Cousin Brucey. Okay, my friends, I am ready to rock and roll.
69 and mostly cloudy on the Ingram Mess.
WABC.
Chuck Leonard here. The Miracle's there. A love machine, baby.
The Ron Lundy Show on Super Go Go Radio.
But pretty soon, those playlists got too repetitious. So at night, in bed, when I should have been sleeping, I'd plug an ear jack into my Panasonic AM-FM and stealthily scan the AM dial. What was I looking for? Well, I wasn't sure. A lot of it sounded like the first few seconds of this show's intro theme. Static, commercials, Spanish language stations, usually at the upper end of the dial. In between all that, if cosmic conditions were just right, I'd pick up a skip from hundreds of miles away, like CKLW, just over the Canadian border from Detroit, home of Boss Radio. Sometimes I'd really hit pay dirt, pick up a border blaster from Mexico, like XERF, where Wolfman Jack got his start.
Rock and roll, everybody, oh, Wolfman Jack, out here to Yakko, bring it on!
It signaled blanketed two continents, from Tierra del Fuego to Hudson Bay, with 250,000 screaming watts of amplitude modulation. Of course, it was in English, so they could siphon ad dollars from legit American radio stations, deliver a lower cost per thousand than any puny stick with a mere 50,000 watts and FCC oversight. It was magnificent. I'd listen, and I envisioned a tiny cinder block station in the Sonoran Desert, dwarfed by a transmitting antenna the size of the Eiffel Tower. Imagine my amazement to eventually discover that my mental picture was pinpoint accurate. That was exactly what the station looked like. That picture was further embellished in my mind by the DJ's dusty convertible Coupe de Ville parked outside. When his shift ended at midnight, he'd fire up the caddy, blast down the road under a million stars. He'd stop at some adobe cantina with a flickering neon sign that said, Cerveza. What adventures awaited him inside, huh? Some sizzling señorita who was a fan of his show? Ornery bikers shooting pool? Or maybe just two old drunks nursing beers in the corner? Whatever it was, it beat hell out of the gray concrete streets of Queens, New York, or even the skyscrapers of Manhattan, where all the New York radio stations were. I'd been in all those buildings, but they lacked mystery and adventure. Sometimes I'd catch a skip from way south,
Radio Havana,
where the announcer had the voice of God, thanks to an insane amount of compression. And he'd begin damn near every sentence with,
Los Imperialisticos Estados Unidos.
By seventh grade, they were teaching Spanish, and so I could understand every fourth or fifth word. Enough to realize that Cuba, once the playground of the Caribbean, had been turned into a commie shithole by a cigar-chomping, Rolex-wearing man of the people named Fidel Castro and his homicidal boyfriend, doctor, yes, he was a physician, Ernesto Che Guevara. But radio skips weren't my first introduction to Cuba. I got that from many of my grammar school classmates whose families were refugees from Cuba. These were kids whose parents were middle and upper-class Cubans who presciently discerned that Castro was cancer and all his promises were lies. So they took what they could carry and got out, before he made the island a prison. Betcha back in Cuba, they were called conspiracy theorists and anti-government insurrectionists. They despised Castro and his Marxist regime. They were good kids. They taught me how to play soccer. Took me to bodegas where we'd buy lengths of raw cane and gnaw on it all afternoon. After a while, I'd grow weary of Radio Havana's commie propaganda and start twisting the dial again. Sometimes I'd stop at the station Larry King was on. Yes, he got his start on radio with a program called Open Phone America. It was fun. I'd listen to other talk shows, and sometimes I'd pick up a skip from the Bible Belt. The black preachers always sounded like Screamin' Jay Hawkins or Wilson Pickett. When I'd try to imitate them, I could only get a few syllables out until my throat would hurt. Yet those guys could shout nonstop for hours. How did they do it? They'd break away to the singers. They were always female and sounded like Elvis's incredible backup trio, the Sweet Inspirations. Except they weren't coming from some glitzy concert hall. They were probably in some storefront church in Jackson or Birmingham. There was a lot of audience participation. People yelling hallelujah and amen Jesus. Those preachers instinctively understood the musical underpinnings of good oration. They would start soft and slow and build to thundering crescendos, and the crowd would be swept along with them in a frenzy of soul salvation. Their white counterpart preachers were sedate by comparison. Flatline delivery, milquetoast music, I found them low energy and kind of boring. Fast forward several decades, and I'm all grown up with a wife and two young kids living on the other side of the continent in Los Angeles. It's December of 2017. I'm taking a mental health drive through the San Gabriel Mountains that surround much of L.A. For the hell of it, I turned down a dirt road just to see where it led. I drove it for several miles, winding through the backwoods. On one side was mostly a steep slope, on the other, eucalyptus trees. The road's getting rougher, I have only two-wheel drive, and I don't want to be backing up for miles on such a janky route with no guardrail. As I'm doing a broken KU turn, I see something through those trees. A wooden building. Now this was many, many miles from any town. It was too tall to be some hunter's old cabin. I park the car and hike in a bit, and there it is. A tiny chapel with a small parking lot overgrown by sagebrush. Only a few patches of white paint remains on the clapboard. The front door hangs by one hinge. The two wooden steps that lead to the door are askew by several inches. There's no graffiti. I step inside. There's no altar. Where it once had been maybe a dozen pews is now just a dusty floor with holes in it and weeds growing through them. It has only two windows on each side, and incredibly, they're unbroken. There's a tilted lectern, and upon it lays a yellowed Bible. As I'm about to pick it up, something scuttles under a pile of dry leaves in the corner. A lizard. It's about 3 p.m. A breeze kicks up right on time, as it always does in the desert. The door slaps the wall on that single hinge. Spooky. I'd gone quite a distance and figured I should head home. As I drove, I flashed on an idea. I'd had 16 years of Catholic education. It was okay. But it seemed something was always off. Wouldn't it be a kick to clean up that old chapel and have a gathering there each Sunday of a style and spirit that had never been done before? Small, intimate, not to preach but to explore, to talk with people, not at them. Some years before that day in the mountains, my doorbell was rung by Jehovah's Witnesses. This was a first, as my home was atop a very steep hill. There was no car behind them, so I gave them A for effort. They went into a very earnest spiel, and I listened for a while. But when it came time to close the sale, I said, "No, thank you. I'm happy with my current God provider." They both laughed out loud and wished me well. As they closed the door, I thought, yeah, that's a funny line, but it was partially true and partially false. My current God provider, since birth, was the Roman Catholic Church. That was true. The lie was that I was happy with it. I always felt that the church of every denomination, had reshaped, repainted, reimagined the main man, the big dude with a beard and sandals, into someone and something that he clearly was not. They always depicted him as a sunken-chested, woeful, humorless, whispering wimp. He was, and is, the most charismatic and successful figure who ever lived. He was a card, a pistol, a live wire, a wise guy, a seer, and a sage whose personal magnetism could reverse polarity of the earth itself. And did. Who wouldn't want to know that guy? To hang out with him, listen to his stories, absorb his limitless wisdom. With the help of a few friends, one of whom had a pickup truck, we dragged a couple of couches and old stuffed chairs back up to that chapel, swept out the floor. More creatures scuttled beneath the boards. Somebody brought a little Honda generator, so we had some interior light. Then someone else brought a small propane barbecue, then a couple cases of beer. It was getting good. I knew a guy who fronted a wedding band. He's a pretty good singer. He brought his Korg CX-3 and plugged it into that Honda. He knew some girls from the church he attended who loved to sing. We named them the Lariettes. And Sinner's Sunday was born in an abandoned chapel hidden in the mountains. No robes, no rituals, no ass-punishing benches, no kneelers, and no confessionals. This is what it sounded like.
It's time for Brother Larry's Sinner's Sunday. Oh, yeah. You tell him, Larry. Brother Larry coming at ya.
Thank you, Brother Dre. Thank you, Lariettes. I duct taped a Tascam DR-40 to a microphone stand, leaned on the crooked old lectern, and started to talk about many things of a spiritual nature. Most Sundays it was about JC, but we also covered a lot from the Old Testament. David and Goliath, Samson and Delilah, Daniel and the lion's den. Every story was a great one. And when you looked a little deeper than the basic plot points, you quickly realized that people have not changed in thousands of years and they never will. Some are good. Some are rotten. Most are somewhere in between with occasional bursts of good or evil. They say that all the wisdom of the world is contained within the Bible, and that's absolutely true. And now here we are on the doorstep of the greatest spiritual holiday of all, Easter. When a guy did something no other person or creature has ever done, he came back. He'd already raised Lazarus from the dead, but few people knew Lazarus, and he was resurrected with no fanfare. But J.C., was something of a rock star to those who recognized his divinity. To others, he was a heretic, a blasphemer, and most importantly, a threat and an enemy of the state. So am I announcing the return of Sinner Sunday? I'm not sure. Maybe. But it seems now might be a very good time. The ramshackle chapel is 3,000 miles away, if it's still there at all. I doubt there's sufficient wilderness in Connecticut where I could replicate the elements that made those gatherings magical. Brother Andre quit the music business and became a realtor. And who knows where the Lariettes are. When I first began the show in February of 2018, the world was in turmoil, as it always has been. But in only 5 or 6 years, turmoil has turned to something unimaginable. A thick cloud of evil now hangs over America and much of the world. Forever, people have been predicting the end of the world. It was a staple of magazine cartoons, the wild man on the corner carrying a sign and yelling about the apocalypse. Only now, some big-time evangelists are taking up the same cry. Slick, professional, corporate god providers with fancy churches of stone and marble and private jets. But if you think about it, selling the end may not be the best sales proposition. It makes people uneasy. And when they get that way, they tend to close their minds and their wallets. But more and more, people are talking about it. Many folks hear, quote, the end, unquote, and figure some cosmic cataclysm that wipes us from the face of the earth. But that's very unlikely. The acronym Teotwaki is the thinking man's apocalypse. The end of the world as we know it. That's the operative phrase. And you needn't be an oracle to see that is already well underway. In the last 4 to 5 years, life as we knew it has changed dramatically, and not for the better. Unless we're in a deep forest or at sea, we're recorded by surveillance cameras. Gas stations, shopping malls, restaurants, bars, schools, traffic intersections, or just walking down the street. Not one of those cameras was installed with your consent. Not one video of you is recorded with your permission. Every doorbell talks and records video and audio. If you carry a cell phone, your location is continuously tracked. No one even challenges this invasion of privacy anymore. Officialdom answers complaints with,
"It's for your safety."
Which, coincidentally, was the same phrase the SS used as they packed Jews onto trains bound for death camps. Call that surveillance. Yet crime is higher than ever. Women are getting sucker punched on the streets of New York. Cops are being murdered by criminals with 21 previous arrests. And Biden's spokeshole blames the murder on the gun instead of the career criminal who pulled the trigger in the city with the strictest gun laws in America. And no one calls the spokeshole on her outrageous, insulting lies. No one dares. Why is that? One reason might be that thousands of people were jailed with horrifically long sentences for essentially trespassing into government buildings which, ostensibly, they own. But the occupants of those buildings have become literal squatters with jobs for life and benefits and perks fit for a rajah. If they aren't multimillionaires when elected, they quickly attain great wealth while serving, finger quotes, the public. As America continues to empty its prisons, it sends a blanket invitation to the entire planet to come at will and welcomes them with a $9,000 debit card, a cell phone, food, and shelter, often in 4-star hotels, while our own citizen poor are living in the street or in horrid SROs. When a bioweapon made in China found its way here, freedom, not only freedom, but free speech, ended. By dictate of politicians, mandating lockdowns, closing schools and businesses, everything they said was a lie.
Just cooperate for 14 days so we can flatten the curve.
14 days became several years. Millions were forced or terrorized into taking an injection that did nothing to stop the disease. But it did stop thousands of young hearts with the myocarditis, while triggering turbo cancers and myriad other debilitating ailments. Those who resisted were mocked, ridiculed, demonized, shunned, fired, and broken. Even on social media, posts that challenged government and big pharma were removed and the posters often banned from the platform. Most of this change is new and has accelerated, all within the past 5 years or less. This is not merely time marching on. There is nothing natural or cyclical about this. This is the end of the world as we know it. And so preppers stock up on beef jerky and ammo and medicines and so on. And maybe their preparations will prove to be prudent. There's no indication that the forces of evil who are orchestrating this new and hideous way of life are backing off. They do what they do without fear of backlash or consequence or reprisal. And so, we see the world as we know it, ending, as T.S. Eliot predicted, not with a bang, but a whimper. Which is why I may resume Sinner's Sunday in some fashion, because many of us, myself included, need to prep for the long haul. And the dude who wrote the book on that was J.C. He saw it all coming 2,000 years ago. This Sunday, I'll be celebrating the most glorious day of the year. That was J.C.'s first comeback. But he clearly said he'd be back again. And the second time, he's not going to be very nice. According to Matthew, J.C. said, "Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword." Ooh. Revelations elaborated further, where it's written, quote, "From his mouth comes a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron. He will tread the winepress of the fury of the wrath of God the Almighty." Unquote. Ooh, now that's not the Prince of Peace talking. That's a guy wielding a weapon, a sword to hack them to pieces, and an iron rod to keep them in line. If he misses any, he'll crush them like grapes with fury. Fury! Oh, fury! Better get him some anger management. That might even be hate speech, or maybe that's... Is that a terrorist threat? If I'm still around when J.C. returns for Act 2, I sure want to be on his side. For selfish reasons, and to see the two-legged cockroaches torn asunder and ground into a pulp. Because that's what they deserve. It will be the ultimate regime change. And quite permanent. In the meantime, I will attend Easter Mass, even though at the church of a corporate God provider. Because churches aren't all bad, and some of them do quite a lot of good. Thanks for hanging with me once again. Visit thatlarryshow.com for hundreds more episodes, or to donate and help me keep this going. If you want to shoot me an email, the address is also on the homepage. Happy Easter. And until next week, God bless.